This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
The one thing I can say with certainty is that if we listen to people like Stevens for another 10 or 20 years, then we will be handing our kids a world that is probably beyond saving.
Is the New York Times enabling a debate that most rational people think is long over? The latest conservative pundit to be hired by the New York Times has progressives and environmentalists concerned. Bret Stephens, a Pulitzer Prize-winning opinion journalist from the Wall Street Journal, made his first splash onto the op-ed page of the Times recently with a controversial piece entitled "Climate of Complete Certainty." In this editorial, he asserts that climate science should continue to be debated, despite a preponderance of credible evidence sounding the alarm for immediate action. This week on Sea Change Radio, we speak with two PhDs with differing responses to Mr. Stevens' perspective and place at the Gray Lady. First, I'm joined by Joe Rome, the founding editor of Climate Progress, who's critical of the new hire. Then we hear from psychologist Pamela Paresky, who, as a friend of Stevens, thinks that his brand of climate action denialism could actually be a catalyst for productive dialogue that might ultimately bring conservatives over to recognizing the threat of climate change. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Joe Rome. Joe is the founding editor of climateprogress.org. Joe, welcome back to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks for having me.
So, for our listeners who aren't familiar with Bret Stephens, who is he and why is his hiring by the New York Times relevant?
Well, most recently, he was columnist and deputy editorial page editor for Rupert Murdoch's deeply conservative and climate-denying Wall Street Journal. And in 2015, he wrote that climate change, along with hunger in America, campus rape statistics, and institutionalized racism are, quote, imaginary enemies. He just got hired to be a columnist for the New York Times, which obviously is one of the biggest megaphones there is in the media.
And his first column as an op-ed columnist for the New York Times is entitled "Climate of Complete Certainty." Well, why don't you kind of give our listeners an executive summary of his thesis?
So he basically makes the argument that because Hillary Clinton lost, but everybody thought she was going to win because of some polling data, that means we can't trust any scientific conclusion. And it's obviously pretty ridiculous. Polling data is pretty well known not to be rigorous or scientific, whereas climate science has been around for, you know, over a century, the basics of it, and we've confirmed all the basic predictions for many, many decades. So, you know, that's sort of right off the bat a silly argument by analogy. And then he, you know, goes on to make a bunch of statements of error, factual error, and try to create the impression that scientists don't know what's going to happen if we keep listening to people like him who don't want to do anything. And if we do, of course, we're going to end up with catastrophic climate change. And he puts this forward with the standard, oh, I'm just asking questions type of thing. Very nice piece at Vox by Dave Roberts in which he shows the, oh, I'm just asking questions line is what they've been saying for 25 years, and climate scientists and others have answered all those questions over and over again, but instead of finally doing something, they're just, oh, asking questions.
Just starting a conversation.
Just having a conversation. Why are you so upset that I'm just asking questions? And the answer is, well, you know, I sort of make the analogy that if you were had been diagnosed by your doctor as your persistent cough was being diagnosed as early stage emphysema, and your doctor said, the overwhelming scientific consensus is that if you don't want your condition to get worse, you need to quit smoking. And your reply was, but doc, everybody thought Hillary Clinton was going to win. You know, we should have a debate about this. You know, at some point, when for 25 years, climate scientists and the nations of the world have been increasingly saying we need to act, and people have been making these ridiculous arguments, oh, we don't know, we don't know, we don't know. And to the point now, of course, we're actually seeing sea level rise, hitting Miami and other cities on perfectly normal days, and extreme weather events that we never had before, record droughts, ocean acidification. The debaters no longer should be allowed to obfuscate the issue. And, you know, beyond that, this is the New York Times, right? So they have 10 full-time reporters who have been reporting on the dire nature of climate change and sea level rise. And, you know, most everything Stevens has been saying for 10 years is totally at odds with the news division of the New York Times. And they both can't be right. And you know, it's one thing to have the Wall Street Journal editorial page champion, you know, disinformation, but the New York Times has been advertising, maybe people have seen it, you know, for several months now. They've been running this ad, you know, truth, it's more important now than ever. There's no such thing as alternative facts. And yet they hire a guy whose entire career is built around alternative facts. So, you know, I am all for a reasoned discussion of what we should do. But, you know, it's really 10, 20 years past when we should be debating basic climate science, just like the New York Times would not hire somebody who said, hey, you know, I have serious doubts about all this science about cigarette smoking being harmful. You know, I'm just asking some questions. Let's just have a debate about it.
It seems to me that one of the reasons why environmentalists and liberals are rankled by Stevens's hiring is that Stevens is kind of trying to have it both ways. He's an opinion journalist. I don't really know exactly what that means, but he won a Pulitzer Prize for it, and he writes well. But because he's an opinion journalist, he can then espouse whatever ideas he wants without any kind of facts behind them. To me, journalism seems like it needs facts with it, doesn't it?
Well, you know, I pointed out in Climate Progress in a post on Saturday that when Stevens was hired, he was criticized by a lot of people, including me, but climate scientists and others. And in response, the editorial page editor, James Bennett, said, well, you know, although the opinion side is not the same thing as the news side, the New York Times applies the, quote, same standards for fairness and accuracy. Now, they didn't.
Yes. Now, so go down some of the inaccuracies that you pick apart in Stevens's op-ed, which is only 900 words.
Yeah, no, it's an op-ed piece. You know, he has only one scientific sentence with a lot of scientific claims, which is anyone who has read the 2014 report of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change knows that while the modest 0.85 degrees Celsius, or about 1.5 degrees Fahrenheit, warming of the northern hemisphere since 1880 is indisputable, as is the human influence on that warming, much else that passes as accepted fact is really a matter of probabilities.
Now let's break that sentence down.
Yeah, and I wrote this. This probably sets the record for the most errors in a single sentence ever published in the Times. And so first off, he has the link to the report in that sentence. And the fact is that anyone who has read that report knows that what he said in the sentence is just not true, starting with the rather blatant error that the warming of 1.5 degrees Fahrenheit isn't of the northern hemisphere, it's of the entire planet. The northern hemisphere has warmed a lot faster than the rest of the planet, in part because there's more land, and the land warms up faster than the oceans.
And more industrialization, right?
More industrialization. And you have the feedback of the loss of the Arctic ice cap.
Right.
So, you know, when you replace the white ice with blue water or dark land, then the more sunlight gets absorbed, so then you get more ice melt. it's also, you know, it really is ridiculous to label this 1.5 degree Fahrenheit warming that we've had so far as modest. I just put a chart that shows that 1.5 degrees Fahrenheit in the last, you know, 100 plus years is equal to the entire change that we've seen over the last several thousand years, during which modern agriculture, cities, and modern civilization were able to thrive, because the climate has been incredibly stable for many, many thousands of years. And so what we've had since 1980 is 50 times the rate of warming that we had temperature change in the cooling direction in the last 5,000 years. And so it's the speed of the change that makes it so hard to deal with, and is the great challenge for species and for humanity, and drives feedbacks that may well overwhelm the system. So, you know, calling it modest is really, I would just say, a very uninformed thing to say. And his entire framing of this shows that he doesn't really understand science, because he tries to make it look like we have all this certainty about stuff that happened in the past, but we have this uncertainty about the future. And then he writes, "Claiming total certainty about the science traduces the spirit of science and creates openings for doubt whenever a climate claim proves wrong." But then he doesn't cite a single instance of anybody claiming total certainty about the science. Certainly, I've never done that. I don't know any climate scientist who's done it, and I don't know any climate advocate who's done it. But he's just trying to, you know, say, oh, look, see, these people, they're claiming total certainty, therefore they're wrong. Whereas, in fact, the only person claiming certainty is Stevens himself, because he never supports a single policy proposal to get us off of our current emissions path. And in fact, he quotes a former New York Times reporter and blogger, Andy Revkin, who tweeted out that he thought that Stevens' piece was full of straw men and phony arguments, and that in fact, uncertainty is a reason for acting, not a justification for doing nothing. So, you know, I would just call this, you know, rehashed climate misinformation. You know, I spoke to climate scientist Michael Mann, and he just, you know, says it's really abetting the climate science deniers. And the New York Times is so much better than this. You know, this New York Times is not the Wall Street Journal.
But the New York Times has historically gone after these provocateurs from the right wing. They had William Safire in the early 70s, who was a Nixon speechwriter, and there was much ado about hiring him, and same went for Bill Kristol. Do you think this is different?
Well, I mean, they have David Brooks. David Brooks is still there, and they have a number of columnists already who occasionally write, you know, very misinformed pieces on climate change, including Joe Nocera and John Tierney. So I, you know, the issue is whether the voice of misinformation is something that the New York Times needs to bring to its editorial page and to its opinion page. And, you know, again, if the New York Times believes what it prints in the news section, then what Stevens is printing is just hogwash. It's classic delay, don't act, you know, this is all hysteria, this is all an imaginary enemy created by liberals.
Thin-skinned liberals.
Thin-skinned
can't take
liberals,
it, right?
Yeah, and by the way, it's utterly ridiculous for him to claim that he's agnostic. I mean, literally, in November 2015, his column before the Paris Climate Talks is titled "Liberalism's Imaginary Enemies," and much of it is devoted to climate change. Now, if you're calling climate change an imaginary enemy, then you are not agnostic on this. And the final paragraph in that piece, He writes, here's a climate prediction for 2115, 100 years from now. Liberals will still be organizing campaigns against yet another mooted social or environmental crisis. Temperatures will be about the same. So predicting in 100 years the temperatures will be about the same, that's not a person who's agnostic. That is a person who is literally denying that even the current rate of warming is going to continue unless we slash carbon emissions. So, no, he's pretty extreme, and he gave an interview later with Vox, which just said some, you know, even more extreme things. He claimed that Germany's, he said literally his wife is German, so he knows something about Germany's energy policy, and their renewable policy after 15 years has led to more carbon pollution, which again is utterly, utterly false.
Yes, let me read to you the blurb that you're referring to from David Roberts. From this interview with Vox's Jeff Stein, Stephen says, quote, I think Black Lives Matter has some really thuggish elements in it. Look, at the risk of being incredibly politically incorrect, but I guess that's my job, I think that all lives matter, not least Black lives, end quote. This is perfect, says Roberts. The delivery of a faux, profound bit of conservative conventional wisdom in tones that suggest A, no one has ever thought of it before, and B, willingness to say it demonstrates a kind of tough-minded courage. And then Roberts, later on in a tweet storm, says that he's not coming up with new ideas, but the way he presents them is kind of giving the impression that he's just asking these questions. But there are a lot of scientists and people who actually do a lot of hard work who are asking incredibly hard questions. And we have a lot of discussions amongst climate change acceptors from the 99.9% of the scientific community on what's the best path to carve in terms of policy and clean energy futures, right? There's a lot to discuss.
Yeah, and he doesn't quote a single climate scientist. There's no evidence that he's ever talked to a climate scientist. You know, I have to read this other part, because the other part of the Vox interview, when he's asked to defend his extreme denial of climate science, he literally says, quote, a guy I know just had a baby, and he's a big global warming climate change activist. If he thinks in 20 years we'll be headed towards unsustainable climates and there'll be tens of millions of people being displaced, presumably including himself, at the most apocalyptic level, then presumably he wouldn't be having children. It contradicts the belief that we're heading ineluctably for an apocalyptic environmental future. So his argument, by anecdote, is he knows a guy who says he cares about the climate, the guy had a kid. That proves that that guy couldn't possibly believe that doing nothing about climate change would be catastrophic. It's just a extremely intellectually dishonest argument. It makes no sense at all. He creates a straw man. I wrote a book called Hell and High Water the same year that I had a kid. And certainly I do worry about what the future will bring. We're still going to need kids and people who are going to be working on this solution, because you and I are not going to solve it all by ourselves. The one thing I can say with certainty is that if we listen to people like Stevens for another 10 or 20 years, then we will be handing our kids a world that is probably beyond saving.
Joe Rome, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
My pleasure. Thanks. Anytime.
I have heard rumors all over town. They say that you're planning to put me down. All I'd like you to do, tell me that it isn't true.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by psychologist Pamela Paresky. Pamela, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks for having me.
So full disclosure, Pamela and I went to high school together and reconnected on Facebook a few years ago. And you wrote a piece recently for Psychology Today about Brett Stevens' hiring by the New York Times. It's entitled Brett Stevens Out of the Bubble. Why don't you first give us an overview of the piece for our listeners?
So I wrote the piece because I'm particularly interested in how we have siloed ourselves from the standpoint of who we speak to, who we listen to, and where we get our news. And so for the New York Times opinion page to bring Bret Stephens, you know, from the Wall Street Journal, which is, you know, a conservative paper, and Bret Stephens is known as being a conservative pundit or thinker, journalist, opinion journalist. I thought it was a really interesting choice, and I'm happy that there's this kind of crossover where people are now going to have the opportunity to hear from thinkers that they wouldn't otherwise have heard from at the New York Times. I'm not a political thinker. I'm a psychologist. So I'm much more interested in the idea that people are either open or not open to hearing views with which they disagree, and especially from outlets that they trust or feel a sense of connection to. So for people who read the New York Times, many of them are having a negative reaction to the idea of somebody like Bret, who thinks differently, being on that platform.
And as a psychologist, what did you take from some of the reactions that Stephens has weathered?
Well, it's interesting. Even before he'd written anything at all for the New York Times, before his first piece came out, which was posted online on Friday night and went on in the printed version on Saturday, before that was even published, there was a change.org petition to have him fired that had over 25,000 signatures. So I found that interesting. And then, of course, his piece, it was called Climate Uncertainty, and had to do with climate change policy and the ways in which we speak about climate change. And that also didn't get a positive reception for the most part, which I also found interesting because many of the things that he said should have been things that people who think of him as a climate denier would have been surprised by and maybe pleased by. But I didn't see too much of that reaction.
Do you think he's a climate change denier?
No, not at all. And one of the things that he said is none of this is to deny climate change or the possible severity of its consequences. That was word for word what he said.
But what does he say next?
I don't have it in front of me.
He says, but ordinary citizens also have a right to be skeptical of an overweening scientism. So his beef has changed just in the last year. He's now rebranded himself as a climate change agnostic, as he calls it. He's not denying climate change, but now we should be skeptical of science and the scientific process. And
I don't think he said we should be skeptical of science. He said scientism, which is different.
What is the difference between scientism and science?
So scientism is a term that social scientists use to describe when science is used as a replacement for religion instead of the real scientific method. Now, he could be wrong that there is an overweening scientism, but that's what he's complaining about. And so the thing that I find interesting is that we have such thick lenses through which we read and hear. I think if this piece that Bret had been written either by somebody else that people who typically read the New York Times trust, or they just didn't know who had written it, they might have read it slightly differently. So given that I know Bret, some of the ways in which I write it might be different too, read it might be different than, you know, because I do have a lens. And I mean, you could have seen it as sort of an olive branch or a love letter even to people who care about climate change, who care about climate change policy. He was saying, here are some ways you might be more effective in creating good climate policy. And one thing he said was, perhaps if there were less certitude about our climate future, more Americans would be interested in having a reasoned conversation about it. He's speaking from a group of people he knows. And he's giving advice that if you want to bring along the people who don't say they care that much about it, or even the people who may not think that it's a problem, here's one way you might consider doing it.
I understand the point he's making there, and you convey it quite well. The only thing is, I mean, when you look at whether Americans believe X, Y, or Z, you can get into some pretty sticky things. I think trying to bring these people into the discussion is interesting, but what people like David Roberts, who's an environmental writer, he says, I, for one, look forward to meaty debates based on political, economic, policy analysis, rather than dopey obfuscation on science. But Stevens isn't that. He's just another off-the-shelf conservative hack desperately groping for new ways to obscure this issue. So yeah, I think the New York Times shouldn't have hired him, not because I'm scared of serious intellectual engagement on climate, but because I crave it. Stevens' presence on the most valuable real estate in journalism just helps ensure that the climate debate remains dumb kabuki.
I think what he's saying is that when you approach what we need to do with a level of certainty, it's off-putting. And he's right from a psychological standpoint, because, I mean, imagine any kind of conversation that you want to have with someone who you want to bring along to your point of view. If you start from the perspective that they're stupid and wrong, and they're uneducated and ignorant, are you going to be effective? Probably not.
Climate has become a real hot button issue, but let's say there was a study that showed that 99 out of 100 doctors have determined that sugar causes tooth decay. Now, do we need to have that one doctor in there to have like a balanced, open discussion? Do we need to engage that doctor? How would you approach that doctor?
It's not really a fair comparison. Because,
why not?
Because the article we're talking about that Brett wrote, he's not denying that climate change is real. He's talking about among the 99% of climate scientists who say climate change is real, there are some different ways of looking at how much we need to do now, when we need to do it, what it's worth spending, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
That's critical. That's not an et cetera, et cetera. And as Andrew Winston writes, he says, sure, let's not call somebody like Stevens a climate denier. We can call him a climate action denier because he doesn't set forth any solutions, anything to go forward in terms of serious policy. So let's call him a climate action denier.
You could call him that. You could also call him a climate action conversationalist. It depends on your perspective. Is it worth having a conversation with people who aren't already there? Is it worth it?
It is worth it to some degree, but if we keep kicking the can down the road decades upon decades, the discussion is decided because we have to act now.
Right. If we want to be effective in getting climate policy, a good climate policy enacted, if we want to be effective, we do have to bring along people who aren't already there. And he is giving us some advice. And I think that it's worth taking because he knows the people. He knows the people that we're not talking to. So this is good advice. Brett built up years and years of trust for the readership of the Wall Street Journal. And he has a long way to go to build up trust with the readership of the New York Times. But in the meantime, he's a bridge. And if we're smart, we'll use that opportunity and, you know, look very carefully at what people like. He's a serious, really intelligent thinker. And even serious, intelligent, smart people can be wrong. And I don't know whether he's wrong. I don't know anything about the data. All I know is it's an opportunity that would be really sad to miss.
Pamela Paresky, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by Lettuce and Bob Dylan.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week
as we continue making connections for sustainability. For SeaChange Radio, I'm Alex Wise.